Welcome to America's
Radio.
It wrong every time. Welcome to America's Most Haunted, everyone. This is Teresa Argy, the Haunted Housewife, along with Eric Olson. Tonight we have Kathy Weber on with us. Very special show tonight. We are the first to have these special guests on tonight. The cast from the new show on Biography, Haunted Encounters Face to Face. It's a new twist on the paranormal reality. It's debuting this month. And it's the latest of a new crop of ghost hunting shows to hit the airwaves, but this show is different. The mold has been broken and the format rewritten. Several locations across the country have been marred by tragedy and death, leaving a trail of unexplainable events. Now the investigative team, known as the Paranormal Syndicate, will visit some of America's most haunted location and use their unique... and record tangible evidence of the paranormal activity. And tonight we have with us Paranormal Syndicate members Daniel Hooven, lead investigator on the show, founder of the Paranormal Syndicate, Helmy Kramer, and in the background, I'm sure you all heard, is the captain. He's the eye candy of the show. Welcome to America's Most Haunted. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So is there a tenille that goes with the captain?
The tenille.
Sorry about that. I had to put it on mute. Apparently
you guys are too young.
House.
I don't even know.
No, I got it. We just don't have the piano right now.
I barely got that, Eric,
you
and I'm your
born
age.
Then,
yeah,
Eric.
Well,
coming on. This is really exciting. Kathy and I have known Daniel for quite some time. We have adopted him into our dysfunctional paranormal family, and Helmy has been a friend for a while, and we couldn't be more proud and more happy for you. And this show, it is different. And if anybody has caught the previews on the biographychannel.com, you can see where it's different. But we want to hear in your own words what makes this show different and what we can expect, besides, of course, having the captain, and we want to talk about him as well. But why don't you, Daniel and Helmy, take turns, introduce yourself, and tell us a little bit about what we can expect on Haunted Encounters.
Daniel, you go ahead.
All right. Well, I think, Haunted Encounters Face-to-Face, it brings a different flavor to the paranormal genre itself. The team itself, which Helmy can get into and how he formed, it consists of myself, Helmy, obviously, the captain, but also Jordan Murphy and Chelsea Damali. Jordan is our researcher and historian. Chelsea is our psychic medium. And it's different in the sense that I think this is going to be the first show that really ensembled a group of individuals with a lot of unique skills and talents that come together to form one syndicate in this case. I know what myself and Jordan really brought to the table as far as when Helmy looked at us was our ripples in time. The idea that if you reenact a key moment at any location that's relevant and twist the ending almost in a butterfly effect where you can get the spirits to react. I think a lot of these shows, unfortunately, that are out there, and they're great shows, a lot of them that are out there, they sometimes forget that in a weird way, we're in the spirit's house. We need to adapt to them.
And Helmy, tell us a little bit about how this project came about and how the Paranormal Syndicate was formed and how you brought this team together.
Basically, I have a weird way of thinking. I rarely like to take things... Yeah, I mean, that's not really breaking news. But I rarely take things for granted. It's one of the greatest gifts my mom ever gave me was the ability to free think. I don't want you to think or anyone to think for any reason that I'm just contrary for the sake of being contrary. However, sometimes when you're told certain things, I like to find out on my own. So with that being said, I really took a different approach as far as the whole paranormal thing goes. I really kind of took this weird evolution to where I looked at different things that a lot of people might have not really you kind of take for granted and not necessarily just up the gut, the mainstream things and those types of things. And I eventually learned that probably the most important yet underused aspect of investigating is history. It seems a lot of times that you can jump into any location and you'll have a handful of people that are going to tell you about the resident ghosts that live there and the urban legends and the myths and all the things that are, that went down there that created these hauntings. You dig in a little bit, get your hands dirty, go down to the archives, you go through the microfiche, you go through the old papers, and you find the majority of times these things never happened. But on the flip side, you find all kinds of crazy things that did happen that have been so covered in dust and forgotten and times passed by. That those are the types of things that kind of actually happened and did happen in these places that actually would have created the hauntings. That was actually, I found that very disconcerting, that was really being overlooked. And I really keep my eye on other people, other teams, groups, you know, try and find out what people are doing out there. And I was super impressed. I mean, I hadn't seen anything like what Daniel and Jordan were doing, and they kept perfecting it. Each time they did it, they evolved, which is kind of the same thing that the same mindset I had. Every time I left a site, I wondered what I could have done better, because indefinitely, what do we go out for? To get a result and to see what's going on in these places. They had it down, and it just was inevitable. I wanted to work with them. And so basically we kept the lines of communication warm. We kept discussing different things, concepts. And then this opportunity came up, and I wanted to basically kind of solidify this whole thing and make it happen, because I bring a whole different type of thing to the table. I love the technology and the outside of the box, some different things, some things that you're going to see in the series, some other things that, you know, obviously the opportunities have to present themselves. So there's some things that I'm working on as well that I would love to exploit in the future to see if there's any validity to it, or, you know, all kinds of really cool stuff. And so that type of thing, integrating their use of history with these ripples, which is just incredible to watch the interaction. I've never had anything like that. I've never had that kind of success. So, I mean, I was onto the right idea. They took it and made it work. And then, obviously, I've done a lot of stuff with dogs, dog training. That's how I grew up. I saw a real opportunity there, and I get a lot of grief for it, and I know I'm going to get a lot of grief for it in the future. But to actually take a dog and make him an effective teammate, for lack of a better term, it's amazing the types of things dogs could do. And I found the types of things that were valid, that were real, and was able to take that and, you know, from concept to execution. And he really can do some stuff that we can maybe go into later, which is mind-blowing. And he gives us a lot of advantages. And then I'd worked with Chelsea quite a bit in the past, and I really struggled with the psychic thing. I am not sensitive. My wife says I'm insensitive all the time. I think that, that might have something. I don't know. She might be on to something. But, I, again, going back to what I originally said, I struggle with the whole concept of things that I have to experience these types of things for, you know, in a lot of capacities to validate them. In my own mind, I have to experience them. I can't with this. It's not anything I can do. I can't train myself. She had told me some things and gone into almost uncomfortable depths with some investigation types of things, personal experiences I'm not big into. I rarely share them. And she told me about some of them that was just, it was remarkable. It was too much to be coincidental. So I continued working with her, and again, it gives us another advantage. She can tell us and see things that we may not be able to see and help us, you know, that's the thing. You got to be nimble, shift gears and refocus and, you know, in efforts to get the best possible results. So all of those pieces, I took them, put them together. I'm really excited about the outcome. It's even better than I would have imagined. So I feel really lucky that all of this came together and we have this opportunity to share it with everyone.
Coolness. Let's tell people Haunted Encounters Face to Face premieres Friday, November 30th. So in other words, a week from Friday, right? At 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific, I'm sure, and 9 Central. How many episodes did you guys do?
We did there's going to be a total of 9 locations. We did five episodes, 2 locations an episode, with one special episode being a full hour at the Super Haunt of Eastern State Penitentiary.
Very cool. And I am looking at that. Lots of good information on the bio, which is, I noticed in the URL, is still biography. They didn't shorten the URL. So it is biography.com/TV. /haunted-encounters. And there's lots of good information. There is an episode guide. There's really actually a very informative and pretty funny meet the cast. Did you guys write your own bios? Because they're pretty funny and go into quite a bit of depth.
We did. We were given that opportunity to kind of they let us, you know, be ourselves, which is such a blessing from both Ping Pong and A&E and Bio. They really embraced us as who we were and let us write us up. And, you know, it's great. You know, Halloween is actually my favorite. It cracks me up whenever I read it.
I wrote Daniel, but I did write Daniel's, but it was rejected, so they took the real one. But
hey, I have a question. So the captain now.
Yes.
I'm trying to visualize. Okay, so he doesn't have fingers. Isn't it hard to push the buttons on the digital recorder?
It's voice activated. We just tie it to his back.
Good answer. I like that. Hey, really interesting. I very much like the concept, and I was watching which is another thing people should check out. Go watch the preview video. Looks like you got video maybe from every episode, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's quite a bit 16, on there.
16 total videos up, both on bio.com, biography.com, and their official YouTube as well.
Excellent. Yeah, and that really does, I think, give you a pretty good sense of things. And I was watching in particular the ripple in time technique. And what it really is kind of in essence, you're doing a live dramatization on the spot. But then, as you said, kind of twisting it from what you believe to be kind of the outcome. Is that a fair interpretation, or am I not getting it quite right?
That's very accurate. The ripple in time, the way we utilize that on the show is, you know, for example, on the series premiere, November 30th, Lizzie Borden and the Silent Movie Theater visit. Lizzie Borden, our ripple in time is we reenact the murder, except our twist is that the father, who was asleep when she murdered him in real life, the father wakes up and actually kills her in self-defense. And in response, we got some really great EVPs from that session. So it's almost, you know, Lizzie Borden, while most of us wouldn't be proud of killing our father, I believe she was. And, you know, Jordan and I proceed to do that ripple where Jordan, playing Lizzie Borden, is murdered by her father, and we let our recorder Pandora roll. And we get some amazing, you know, results. The one that you see in the preview actually comes out and says, "Hatchet," because I ask, what is this? What were you going to kill me with while holding it? And we hear, "Hatchet."
Wow. Well, that's creepy. So Lizzie did it?
That's up for debate. I know a lot of people, I can only speak for myself, you know, I believe she did do it. And either way, she made her presence felt at the Lizzie Borden house.
Was it Dead Files where they really got into some very sordid perceived details on the motives for the crime and whatnot? That was super creepy. Did you guys encounter any of the theoretical rationale for why she may have done it?
There were a lot of theories talked on the cast. I know when it comes to actually researching a location, you know, Jordan dwells into that a lot in her role. And you know, we kind of went by the books on that one. Now, there were other discussions, there were other theories thrown out there. I know Jordan actually had a one-on-one session on the second floor of the Lizzie Borden house by herself, and I believe she did explore the other options. I actually haven't seen that part. I just remember things got really wild, which is also on one of the previews.
Daniel, on an episode, would you come to a conclusion at the end of whether it's haunted or not, or whether you think it played out the way history writes it? Do you come to any type of conclusion?
I think, and, you know, homie, definitely chime in on this. I think when we leave a location, all of us come away with our own impressions, and I think that's what really shapes this team, is that we're continuously thinking ahead, thinking what if, what could be. I know myself personally, I didn't think the Lizzie Borden house was haunted. I thought it was one of those places that you just go to for a ghost story. And I remember Jordan telling me, "You're wrong about this, Daniel, this place, there's energy coming out of here." And I was made a fool of at the end of the night.
Now, that's true. Daniel and I did have a couple discussions in basically the inception of a lot of our sequences as we went to these locations. there's a couple of times a wink and a nudge, like, yeah, this is going to be interesting. We're going to get to the end of this thing. And it's been kind of embarrassing because, you know, our preconceived notions were it was hype. Obviously, there's a lot of times that you're going to want to associate a place with its negative history, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's haunted. And some of the most unassuming places can be some of the most haunted places. So we're there, we're doing our thing, and I got to say, on more than one occasion, including Lizzie's, I mean, we walked out of there and our mouths were just wide open, just blown away at how much activity was going on there. So.
And sometimes these places, and Kathy and I have both investigated with Jordan and Daniel on several occasions, actually. So it just seems activity seems to be more prevalent around certain people as well. And you can't go by the history. You can't go in with preconceived notions. And Kathy and I can both speak for this. The ripple in time that you guys are employing on this show is not just a reenactment. Reenactments have been done before, and I think at least my personal point of view, when we've seen these on certain shows, they look like they're mostly for show. I don't think that their intention is really, maybe it's to get them into the spirit, so to speak, but when you guys do the ripple in time, you're actually trying to almost bend your reality with the reality that the spirits are feeling. And I think that that has much more opportunity to work. And Kathy and I both thought that Daniel just wanted to see Jordan in a nurse's outfit for a long time. We realized that, no, they were serious, and this technique is unusual, and it works. And the history, and Helmy, I'm sure you realize this too, Eric knows this very well, as we find when we're researching for our book, sometimes the history that is thought to be true is not.
Mm-hmm.
And you find all sorts of inaccuracies and inconsistencies. Have you found anything in your investigations while doing the show that was kind of shocking, or at least not exactly what you had gone in thinking, not what everybody thinks, what America thinks about these certain places? Did you find any of the history to be either untrue or completely different than what you had previously thought?
Well, we did have a couple of luxuries. We went to a couple of locations which are off the grid, for lack of a better term. So, again, and you made a great point, you go in with no preconceived notions. So, basically, we were researching the history basically with no forward knowledge of the location. So everything we had that we went in with, that we were armed with to develop the ripples and everything else along those lines, was directly what we had researched from validated sources. Then there was some of these other locations that have all kinds of this storied history and all that. We, again, don't necessarily, or I got to say rarely, I mean, I'll go out on a limb. We'll go in based, you know, we'll listen to what the reports are, basically just to get kind of an idea of where we might initially focus. But again, the ripples and everything that we do is based off of the actual research that we do. Now, to answer your question, I'm not dancing around it. We didn't necessarily find anything contrary at the locations that we went to. However, again, the ones that are more well-known, the history has been pretty well picked over and, you know, it's common knowledge. So there's not a lot of the folklore in those types of things. I could be wrong, but off the top of my head, I don't think we really found anything contrary to what the standard thought process is for the locations that we had gone to.
Yeah, and I agree 100% with Helmy. I do think that we, you know, really uncovered some unappreciated history, though, as far as that goes. You know, I know to me, because I really, you know, a lot of us, I follow a lot of crime just in my studies, but, you know, the Black Dahlia Murder House is one of the episodes. Not a lot of people really remember that, and I think when we went to Eastern State, most people focus on the fact that Al Capone was there, and we actually made a conscious effort to focus on one of the more underappreciated stories, the tuberculosis outbreak. So I think that, you know, like Helmy said, we did go in really going based on history, but also uncovered, you know, maybe not any secrets, but uncovered some history that kind of maybe got lost in the shuffle.
Daniel, what I do know about the ripple, and I've seen it in action with your team, I want to know, were there any situations, because in the past you and I have talked about how I was almost, as Teresa said, I'm concerned because you take the ripples very seriously. It's not a reenactment. You're basically a part of what's going on. And I was wondering if you had any times where it was almost where there was heightened danger because of the ripple that you were putting on?
I really can't think of any that really stick out. I think there's always a heightened sense of danger. I mean, maybe if we get in character too much, I know at Lizzie Borden's, the hatchet we were using was not a prop. It was one of the hatchets there. So Jordan and I had to really, really, you know, make a conscious effort for me not to hit her with it because we do get into it. But I don't think, you know, I can't really recall a situation where it got too intense as far as that goes.
Because you have had some in the past. Can you tell us about any that were very, very intense?
Yeah, I mean, we've done a lot of ripples that, you know, including, you know, patient-doctor operations, you know, especially Lizzie. I think the Lizzie Borden was one of the more intense ones. And the Silent Movie Theater, the other location featured in the series premiere, there was actually a movie theater shooting in, you know, at this place. And we reenacted that. So I think the biggest danger I perceive is maybe that the spirits are so stimulated by this, or whatever you want to call them, so stimulated by this that, you know, they may want to go into attack mode if that's a possibility.
All right, Daniel and Helmy, when you started off with this project and you had these places in mind that you were going to go to and investigate, what was, and I know some of you hadn't worked together before, you'd known each other and you'd talked and everything, but you didn't really know each other. What was the most surprising thing, Helmy, you can tell me, what was the most surprising thing about your teammates while you started investigating? When you got to see their style of investigating, what was the thing that surprised you most? And did you guys have to kind of adapt to each other's styles, or did you gel right from the beginning?
You know, it's one thing. It's almost, I mean, you talk about paranormal, the definition is something that can't be explained naturally. When we met up, it was unreal. It was like old buddies that I'd grown up with. You know, we had a lot of discussions, a lot of talks. Our mindsets were similar. We knew where our roles were going to be. We were going to find the ropes and get everything and make it work out. It was as though we'd been doing it since we were children together. It was unbelievable, the dynamic, everything just from the first moment. I mean, it's really hard to explain, but it was really interesting because there was really no trial period. We weren't pushing each other's buttons or trying to, you know, find our own roles. It was just immediately we were all comfortable. It all fit, and it was like we'd been doing it forever. It was, I mean, at least that was my take on it. It was absolutely, and it was just a perfect fit. We have so many different strengths, and obviously with everyone you have your weaknesses. We all pick up where the next person leaves off. We have this wonderful dynamic, and we're just such a good, strong overall team. And the only thing I can say is I was just, it was better than I could have hoped it could have been.
That's awesome. Sometimes we find that people are so stuck in their style of investigating that they have no patience or tolerance for other people. And Daniel definitely has a certain style that some people could not appreciate. Of course, Kathy and I love it. And, you know, it's different from how we do it, but we love and appreciate everybody's style. And, we seem to have no problems getting along with people. I wish Jordan could have been on tonight because it would have been nice to, as well to talk to her and hear what it's like to be a woman and her point of view from these reenactments, these ripples you do. I mean, we've seen them on some of these previews. They get pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, Jordan has to play the part, the less pleasant part, possibly. I don't know how I would say that.
The victim.
The victim, almost. And how that would, I was wondering how it would affect her when you left.
Psychologically.
What, if you guys felt any sort of negativity after leaving the investigation site when you go home? And I know Daniel likes to take ghosts home with him sometimes, but hopefully he hasn't. But do you take anything home? Do you ever find that negativity or the heaviness or anything followed you home after one of these intense ripples, these intense investigations?
I mean, I'm used to the entourage theory, as we call it. I know all of us have experiences at home from when we talk to each other. I think it's just part of the lifestyle we've all kind of come accustomed to. You know, I think we're at a point where we accept that there's something going on the other side, if that's what you want to call it. But I know, you know, from talking to Jordan and Chelsea and Helmy, we all do have experiences, or as I like to call them, non-paying roommates when we go home. So I don't think there's any darkness that follows myself personally. I think we've all just kind of, come face to face with it.
Tell me, I would like to find out about the one castmate we're not talking much about, and that's the captain.
The good-looking one.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by you introducing the captain into the whole mix of your paranormal syndicate. And I'd like to see what role he plays. I can't wait to see what role he's going to play. But could you tell us a little bit about how that started? Have you used a dog in paranormal investigation before?
I hadn't, and it took a lot for me to come to that conclusion. As far as the things that I do besides winter sports, my two big passions are paranormal and dog training. I, was fascinated and, participated in both my entire life in some capacity. So to introduce the two together, I had to be absolutely certain that there was an actual dovetail, something that could fit, something that would be effective. Otherwise, it was going to be a slap into the face to both, and it was something I wasn't willing to put forward. So there's a lot of people out there that will say things that their dogs, see things or are sensitive, and, the sixth sense that animals have and all that. A lot of the stuff can't be measured. And eventually, I just finally got into it to try and figure out if there was some kind of legitimate explanation and maybe a possible fit for it. So I spent a lot of time doing research and was able to find out. And I had actually, the funny thing was, is it was just kind of on a whim. I had done scent work training, which is the basis for cadaver dogs, search and rescue, drug and bomb sniffing, and all of that with my other lab, black lab named Bailey, and realized that dogs' sense of smell is their primary sense. They use it like we would use basically our vision, hearing, in probably almost all of our senses combined. If anyone out there has a dog, the first thing your dog does when it goes outside is sticks its nose in the air. It can tell you everything's happening in the neighborhood. We have the limitations of line of sight. So when I dug in a little bit, I found that dogs can smell anywhere, depending on the type of dog, from 10,000 to 10 million times better than we can. And just think if you could smell twice as well as you can now. 10 million times. Dogs can smell electricity. They can smell electromagnetic fields. It's documented, it's proven, it's scientific. It wasn't a theory. So basically, my black lab, Bailey's a little more sensitive and not in the paranormal aspect as far as she's a little more jumpy. And it would have been borderline cruel for me to bring her into a situation to where she would be uncomfortable or nervous because dogs can smell fear. Our pheromones, our anxiety will produce endorphins, adrenaline, all of that. They can smell it, and you'll see dogs that are a little more timid get nervous. Captain is just balls to the wall, and he aims to please, and so it was a really easy decision for me to make. So I went in with this theory and spent months training him with synthetic electromagnetic fields, training him, that's what I want you to smell, and I want you to point it out to me. And it worked, and he got progressively better at it, and it was something, it became a reality. It was a concept that was so out there, but it worked, and he does it. I actually rented places from different dog training facilities, took him to different locations that he was unfamiliar with, and basically used an EM pump, and he got it. He was smelling this thing out in wherever I put it and getting rewarded. So it became a reality, and so I actually introduced him, and we had some great luck with it, but he taught me something. The main point that I was missing is understanding what he's telling me. And going out, I realized there was a couple of times, and it was so exciting, where, and we caught it on film, where he actually caught a shadow figure and reacted to it. He was so busy doing his job. He wasn't just, screwing around, being a dog, sniffing, trying to see what else had been there. He was doing his job. He wanted to find an electromagnetic field. He wanted to find what he was trained to do. And then get startled by something. And like I said, shadow figures, and they were caught on film. And then I realized that was the piece I was missing. And so that's where it really came full circle for me. And then I realized I didn't really understand animal behavior like I had. And so I'm not going to bore you with it, but again, jump back in, read tons of books, talked to behavioralists, all that. If you think you know dogs, you're wrong. I don't care how long you have trained dogs or whatever. You read some books and understand what they're saying. it's pretty remarkable. So by understanding his body language, even the smallest things to facial expressions, to the electromagnetic field sensing, he is a very valid, just an incredible asset to the team. You know, you have any sort of a EMF sensor, millimeter, it's line of sight, it's right there in your hand. He can walk through and sweep a large area and point it out. And if you watch the show, there might be some interesting things in there that demonstrate this. So just a huge, huge, valuable teammate. And I'm just really glad that I'm able to showcase it in a positive light, in a real light, to where it's not a novelty. I mean, he's really doing this stuff.
So just to make sure I understand, he's smelling the energy? Is that what he's picking up on?
He's yeah.
Actually picking up on a scent?
Yeah. Again, it's kind of far away to me as far as the concept goes, but it is an absolute reality. And, simple as doing a quick Google search, animals can smell electricity. They smell so many things, they disregard it. I mean, we become numb to what we smell and deal with on a daily basis. But if we're trained
to identify something. Olfactory fatigue.
Exactly. Yeah, but that's the thing. I trained him, and basically I told him that I want him to find these. And the funny thing is, too, it's almost too good. Anyone out there that does this, if you've got any sort of a millimeter, an EMF sensor, anything like that, walk over to your alarm clock with it, or any sort of a transformer, anything like that in your house, a converter. Those put him off. Sometimes I'll say inadvertently I'll give him his cue, and he'll go over to something like that, and they're all putting off fields. And so the thing is, it's remarkable, but it's real, and it's just super cool.
So that's amazing, and I think you explained that extremely well, and I can clearly see how having such a team member with such gifts would make a big difference and literally give you another dimension. So now let's talk about, you guys not only have added in a canine element, but you have a sensitive. So how are you integrating all of, I guess both, of those approaches into your, more or less traditional, just in terms of having equipment and seeking evidence and that kind of thing? Obviously, you're doing the ripples, which is not traditional, but broadly traditional investigating, and you are then integrating a dog and a sensitive. So how is that different, and how does that work?
I think, really a great way to look at it is really we're a non-traditional team and our investigations are non-traditional. I think with Chelsea, who's able to, as she would put it, almost download memories, and the captain's ability to sniff out these, EMF waves. I remember when Helmy demonstrated for us, he actually put an EM pump in a basement that had a lot of different things in it, mattresses, things like that. He was able to go sniff it out, and that helps us kind of identify a starting point. And then you have our ripples, the Pandora recorder we use. Helmy has a lot of innovative technology he's really building on, such as the Paraline. And we look at each step as just one step of a sequence. And every time we go in, our goal is to combine, the sensitive medium, the captain, the ripples, Pandora, all the different technology Helmy brings as well, and go full sequence at every location to bring you non-traditional, non-traditional style, to show you, there are different ways to think outside the box. And at the same time, really produce results. I'm very confident when I say from the previews and from my experience working with everybody that collectively the syndicate provides and will, really just display some amazing, amazing evidence.
Can you give us an example of something specific, maybe concrete, from one of the episodes where your approach, this non-traditional collective approach, yielded specific evidence or results that would not, or likely anyway, would not have been there using a more traditional approach?
Got to be careful here.
I'm sorry. Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think there's something that was actually in one of the promo spots that, I mean, obviously we don't want to give anything away that's in any of the episodes, but in, that's kind of some dangerous waters here, but it, no, I'm going to let Dan go. I'm having second thoughts on spitting this out. I'm going to let him navigate this for me.
I would say, you know, I think that's something that's going to really allure the viewers into, you know, Haunted Encounters face-to-face is that non-traditional approach. I think that every location, honestly, will show when we're able to have the captain with us, we'll show how we do that. I mean, I can tell you the episodes to look forward to really on that are, you know, on the series premiere, we did have the full gang at the Silent Movie Theater, also Hotel Cecil and the Black Dahlia Murder House. So I would say just, you know, sit back and watch, because every investigation we go on, we try to go full sequence, and I believe that the footage will speak for itself. So I don't want to give any way specifics, because that just wouldn't be fair to everybody out there.
Were there any episodes that you couldn't bring the captain on any of these investigations, or is he going to be part of every one that we see?
No, it was basically he needed to, you know, sometimes it's overkill. I mean, he can go to a location where we've got some big areas, and for us to be walking back and forth in, a pattern form looking for electromagnetic fields isn't a good use of our time. When we've got a large area and we can just send him out or places, where we can't physically get in. However, Dan is going to give him a run for his money. We can fold him up and stick him in any cubby hole. There's repercussions for our actions. Captain, that's kind of his thing. So he's on three, again, like Dan had mentioned, there's five episodes. And the first four are going to be a combination of two locations. And he will be in three separate locations. But again, having him in certain locations would have been overkill, taking him to the Lizzie Borden house, for example. It's very manageable. I mean, it's a decent-sized property, but there's no sense in having him go through there when we could have it covered on our own. So it's not, you know, it's like nailing a thumbtack with a sledgehammer. It's overkill to have the dog at certain locations. And you mentioned before, we've got all these different elements. It's absolutely not a three-ring circus. We are all very intelligent. We all understand what we're doing, and it's well put together. We're not doing things just to be contrary or to be visual or anything like that. Everything we do has a purpose and has been proven effective. So, again, taking Captain out for the sake of taking him would have been irresponsible. But the locations we did bring him to, there was areas and places that we needed him to get into. And when you watch the show, you're going to see exactly why. So, and again, one other thing I do want to kind of mention is we are, I mentioned, very realistic. So when Captain reacts to something, we're not saying that there is ghost activity or a spirit there by any means. But that adds an additional layer. If at the same time he reacts and we catch a shadow figure or we catch an EVP, those are the types of things that add credibility to both sides. It's layered evidence. If Chelsea says that she's seen something in there, we batten down the hatches, circle the wagons, run an EVP session, and get something that corresponds with what she's seen, that's an additional layer. So it's the same thing. If you get an EMF spike, you don't say, oh, there's a ghost here. So these are just additional tools that we use to make sure that we're focusing our sequence in the correct locations. And if we're barking up the wrong tree, pun intended, that we might need to move along. And we have a lot of ground to cover, and these are just additional tools that we have to make sure that we're being effective.
Speaking of moving along, as you were preparing for the series and the episodes started to take shape, were there any things that just were not working out that basically got tossed aside and you said, forget it, let's go in a different direction?
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons I was so excited to have Dan with us. He is focused. The guy is awesome, and I tend to, as you've probably already noticed through the course of this conversation, get a little distracted, long-winded, loquacious, whatever you want to say. He can put everything in perspective. I mean, at times they don't even put me in check. I get so excited, you know, running a Paraland session or something, knowing that I'm going to get something. Like, you know, he can keep everything moving and make sure that I don't get stuck or that we need to go along into, you know, maybe shift gears a little bit. So that's one of his just great additions that he brings to the team is, he's a natural leader.
Mm-hmm. Dan, the path from Velisca to where you are now was sometimes not always smooth. How are you feeling now where you've arrived?
I'm just really, I think, you know, it's surreal. I'm feeling extremely thankful for the opportunity presented to all of us to work with everybody, you know, for helping me to present this opportunity to Jordan and myself and to be able to, you know, meet Chelsea and meet the captain, see how different things are working out there. I'm, you know, obviously none of us are content. We love this. This is our passion. And I think that's really going to shine through because, you know, everybody on this team, myself, Helmy, Jordan, Chelsea, we've been doing this for quite some time. You know, we've been out there. We've been the boots on the ground. So I think that, you know, an opportunity like this is extremely just, it's amazing. And I think that's going to shine through. So I would say I'm feeling excited, very proud of everybody. I think that kind of to go back on the one question, one thing that really helped our team move along was the fact that we would assess what was working. Yes, the ripples are great, but what locations maybe wouldn't they work at? And, you know, we always kind of got together as a group and sat down and, you know, had a lot of think tanks. So I'm just, you know, very thankful for the opportunity with everybody involved, thankful for the, I can't say enough good things about the production crew and everybody involved that really just embraced us as who we were and, you know, let us do our thing.
I'm always really interested in origin stories, and there's been a lot of sort of alluding to some of the things, Daniel, especially that you've gone through. But I find it always really fascinating, of course, but also revealing to hear kind of what was the beginning, what was the one event, or if it wasn't an event, you know, the mental or emotional frame of mind that did set you guys on this path. So I'd love to hear kind of what was the fundamental experience that pointed you in the direction of the paranormal, and if there's more than one, love to hear those too.
For myself, I know that, and this kind of thing, you know, really goes along with a lot of our stories. I think all of us, just speaking for myself right now, felt that there was something else out there. I was looking for an adventure. I was 25 years old in a cubicle collecting my paycheck waiting until I was going to die. And that just wasn't the life for me. I didn't feel complete. And I didn't know I wanted to get into the paranormal, but a good friend of mine was into it and introduced me to it. And since then, I really, really embraced it, really embraced the adventure of the unknown. And that's what I love. I love the adventure of the unknown.
So in the bio, I mean, it sounds like you're referring to you were sort of led led you to the Villisca murder house. Is that right? Was that kind of where you had the a fundamental experience?
Yeah. That was my personal one, yes. My one friend was going there to film for a web series he was building. And I went there kind of on the, I was a fringe believer. I'm an open-minded guy, but I have to see it to believe it. And was turned into a believer at that small, probably 400-square-foot house in Villisca, Iowa.
What happened?
We were setting up, and they had an EVP running, just an Olympus running or something. And they jumped out, scared me, and we all had a good laugh. So I would just, you know, so I jumped back. And we played back the EVP player, and there were little girls laughing. And that's when I realized there was a lot of other things going on around me.
I tell you, the first time you experience something at a paranormal investigation, or the first time, even if you're not investigating, your first paranormal experience is usually the most profound. And when you start to do this as an investigator, those first EVPs, I mean, Jerry, I remember my first EVP.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy, remember your first EVP?
Mm-hmm.
It's life-changing. And I can only imagine they have something in a place like Villisca.
Mm-hmm.
Helmy, what about you? What was your
pivotal moment?
Yeah, what was your pivotal moment, your first encounter with the paranormal, your the thing that really said, wow, there's something more to this?
It's almost embarrassing. My therapist says I wasn't held enough as a child, and that's why I'm fascinated with it. So. I am probably the one person that doesn't have some kind of a story that goes into this. I mean, I'll be honest with you, and it actually just kind of came up. My mom brought over a box or several boxes of things from when I flew the coop when I was 18, of stuff that I left behind. And the heavy box was a complete set of ghost books. And basically what happened is when I was, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, somewhere in that, my mom read a whole bunch, and I was going through all of the books in the library, and there was this book called Into the Unknown. It's you probably got it free for having Reader's Digest. But I just went through it, and it was pictures. It was old school. I mean, I'm 38, so, I mean, this is a 30-year-old book plus. And it was some really interesting stuff, anything from ghosts all the way through UFOs to Sasquatch, the whole paranormal spectrum at that point. And I just stare at these pictures of these ghosts, these iconic photos that we've all seen. And from there was no turning back. Everything I did, and, you know, it was voluntary as far as schoolwork or anything. I'm sure they probably flagged me as a weirdo, but it was always about ghosts. I was always fascinated with ghosts and the concept. And it wasn't a fear of mortality or a curiosity about what happens after we die or anything. It was just the actual fascination with ghosts in themselves. And that's kind of what got me into it. So I've always been fascinated into it, researched it, anything, any article that came up, I was all over it. But, yeah, getting out in the field and actually experiencing it is entirely different. And like you said, it was the first EVP. As a matter of fact, I caught an incredible orb on my first investigation that I wanted to be a ghost so bad, but knew it was just, you know, a piece of dust falling off a ceiling fan or whatever it was. But the first EVP that I got, I probably listened to it 2,000 times over and over and over and just let it sink in. It's just, it changes you. I mean, to your soul, to your core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, knowing that no one said it, that you were there by yourself and there's that voice, it's just, you know, responding to you, it's just...
Well, it just opens up so many possibilities. It's, wow. I mean, it makes it concrete. It gives it an objective element. I'm wondering, just off the top of your head, taking it one level deeper, why do you think you were so fascinated with ghosts as ghosts? I mean, early on, like looking at those, looking at your books and whatnot. What about ghosts do you think is what really
drew you
in?
Boy, you really
put
me on the couch.
Heck yeah. Hell yeah.
I think the fact that it wasn't tangible, it wasn't something that I couldn't go down to the aquarium and see a stingray or something like that. It's something that, you know, nuclear energy exists. I can't produce it, but I absolutely accept that it exists. Ghosts, you can go ask 50 people, and 25 will say they believe in them, 25 won't. There's a luxury there because we can't prove they exist at this point. I don't know that we will in our lifetime. So the fact that there's so much compelling stuff out there, yet it's just beyond our grasp to be able to demonstrate without a doubt that they exist, even though deep down I absolutely know they exist, but I can't prove it. But getting back to your original question, it's something that I think that it was a challenge for me. I always like to take on challenges. It's just kind of the way I'm wired. And the fascination with that is it could go either way. I could be right. I could be wrong. There's arguments on both sides. And I never let it go. And it just kept festering until it took over my life.
Is there a religious aspect to it for you guys?
None on my end.
Same here. I really exclude any sort of theological approach as far as this goes. Again, just because I caught a voice on a voice recorder isn't validation that there is or isn't a God or anything. There's an afterlife. It's a voice I caught on a recorder from something that wasn't there. So I completely dismiss any sort of theological connection to anything that we do. Just try and stay open-minded.
Interesting. Would you guys, you see a lot of people when they enter into, when the going gets tough, regardless of what their real fundamental beliefs may be, they're willing to bring in the religious storm troops. Is that something you guys would do? You know, in other words, you know, I don't think Zach Bagans is particularly religious, but man, he is absolutely happy to, you know, bust out the exorcists and the demonologists and whatnot in order to, you know, to fight what he believes to be very dark spirits. And I'm just tossing him out as an example. It seems to be something that's fairly common. Is that something you guys would do? And how do you feel? Do you have any thoughts on, are there such things as demons? I mean, is a demon different from just some sort of generically dark or evil or mean or unhappy spirit?
I think, you know, you can honestly kind of segue. You can look up in the sky on a sunny day and see a bunch of clouds and see different things in those clouds. I think that's really open for interpretation. I know right now our main focus really is just to kind of continue to build this group synergy we've been, you know, really blessed with, because we do, like Helmy said earlier, get along great, and just continue to evolve as the syndicate and, you know, do the best we can at what we do, and that's going to a location and trying to get the best evidence through non-traditional approaches. So I would say right now, as far as, you know, what other people do, that's it's everybody's, it's, you know, that's their prerogative. We all do different things. So I say it's just open for interpretation, but I think, you know, my main focus and everybody's main focus is making sure that we deliver the best product available.
Hey, Daniel and Helmy, this is for both of you. With Chelsea being a psychic, and again, I'm not psychic, but is she the sort of psychic who's empathic? I mean, and some of the previews, it looked like she was getting emotional, but being a psychic, maybe she sees something or feels something that you all as investigators don't see. Does she have what happens to her when she gets to a point that it might be a little bit overwhelming or something that may be a little bit darker? And I don't want to say demon, and I don't want to get into a religious aspect here, but how does Chelsea, as a psychic, as a sensitive, handle something that's very intense and very maybe dark or overwhelming or possibly even dangerous when you're on investigations?
She's a tough chick, and quite frankly, there are a couple locations where she had a very strong reaction to. I mean, Dan can maybe try and feel this a little bit better, but again, he's about as sensitive as I am. So, I mean, it's kind of tough to, it's one of those things where I can't even imagine, you know, people go through traumatic things. I can't imagine what they might be like if I haven't experienced anything like that. But there's a couple locations that really affected her. But for the most part, she was able to recognize some angry types of energy, which we went to some pretty dark places where some nasty stuff went down. And she was able to get that, I mean, immediately upon walking in. But she just kind of put up her defenses or whatever it is, you know, again, stuff I can't even begin to wrap my head around. And dug her heels in and was fine. But like I said, there were a couple experiences there that were, she was just physically shaken. And again, you know, as the season unfolds, you'll see those. But I don't know, Dan, what do you think?
I think it's a very unique situation because while, you know, I guess a good way to look at it is we're eavesdropping on this world, she's actually in that world. So I think that, you know, like Helmy said, there's a lot of different dark locations over the season that she's really experiencing something different than we are, but she really held her composure and used that, you know, gift, if that's what you want to call it, to our advantage as a group. So I think it really kind of provides a good idea of, you know, how different a world can be for a psychic or sensitive than it could be for your, you know, investigator per se.
I'm really excited to see how the synergy is going to work with the team. We're lucky enough that we do know Daniel and Jordan, and we know that Jordan is definitely a strong woman who can hold her own.
Oh yeah.
And Mama Kathy and Mama Teresa aren't as worried about Jordan going into some of these places because she does have an experience, and we know that she's strong. But as women, we also know that we can sometimes sense things and pick up things and have intuition about things that are just innate to us. And it happens even to us when we step on a location sometimes that it becomes a little overwhelming or you can feel sad. And it's different. I like when teams are mixed up with women and men to see how they react. And then throwing in the mix the canine, the captain, this should be interesting. I think this is going to be a great show. I think that the viewers are in for something totally different, something that's broke the mold of the reality TV, the paranormal realm. So I'm really looking forward to it. What locations did you not get to go to that maybe you have your eyes set on your wish list for next season, possibly?
You know, everybody has a bucket list. I think Kelmy and I both, we kind of joked that we want to stand at the Ferris wheel at Chernobyl and just cry with our gas masks. I'd like to go to Chernobyl someday, whether it's, you know, on this time or another time, I want to end up at Chernobyl.
Yeah, that sounds dangerous. I think I'll pass on that one.
That's the end of the bucket list. So, I mean, that's the time where, you know, we've done everything else we need to do. We'll take the gas masks off, get naked and run into the woods and... and cry.
Yeah.
For the future, would you like to see some sites in Europe? I mean, would you like to include some that are not so accessible?
I think that would, you know, really fit what we do with everybody on the team. I think all of us have different locations, but I think that we're so adaptable to an environment that I think that'd be a really good challenge for all of us.
That would be logistically difficult to get the captain overseas, though.
Haunted Encounters International.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's the other thing. I didn't mention this before, but, you know, Captain is my best friend. I'm never going to put him in a dangerous situation. Some of these places, for example, Eastern State, it's well-maintained in the areas that are safe to go into, but there's other areas that aren't so safe, and we were given some additional access. And there's some other places, you know, with air quality, dogs are more susceptible than we are as people. So, you know, spending some time in a place that might be dusty or have some other air quality issues, it's just not smart and it's not worth it. So even if it would be, you know, Eastern State would have been great, all kinds of open space, but I'm not compromising his safety for the overall. We'll absolutely make do without him. So that's the whole thing. His safety comes first when we consider a location.
Excellent.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, very glad to hear that.
Super cool. Hey, before we run out of time, guys, it's been a speedy, breezy hour, as we anticipated. We're down to the final minutes. Let's make sure everyone knows what's going on. The debut of Haunted Encounters Face-to-Face. It's on the Bio channel, and that is premiering Friday, November 30th, a week from Friday, and it's at 10 o'clock. And there will be 5 episodes in this first run-through, first season, and I believe we heard 9 locations, right?
Correct.
So that will be amazing. There's all kinds of really good information, very well done, on the Bio website. It's actually biography.com, and then just find your way to the Haunted Encounters area. There's a episode guide. There's lots of video. There's some really good bios, real nice background that will prepare you for the show. And there's also links out from there and right on our page on the Blog Talk Radio page that you guys are likely tuned into. Just right in the text there's some links to other relevant info on these guys. Well, we are very excited for you, and my goodness, you know, how exciting to have a week and a half to go before the debut, and you know, that is an amazing accomplishment, and we absolutely wish you the very best. Hope the show is a huge, huge hit and a stepping stone to just amazing bigger things, including obviously more of the show. Ladies?
Daniel and Helmy, thank you so much for joining us tonight and coming on. You know that we are for sure your biggest fan.
We wish you the best.
We
wish Paranormal Syndicate. We hope you go
absolutely
to the top.
And anybody,
we will be watching.
Anybody who wants more information can go to the Biography website. And also, why don't you guys tell us how people can find you on Twitter or Facebook before we sign off here?
Facebook, just Facebook Haunted Encounters, Face-to-Face. We're on there. There's an official page on there. Twitter, my handle is at Daniel Hooven. Jordan is at Jordan_Murph, M-U-R-P-H. Chelsea is at C. Damali, D-A-M-A-L-I. Helm, you want to throw out the official haunted encounters, the captain and yourself?
Yeah, I am the Helmy. Captain is Captain Para Canine. But if that's too much for you all at once, go to Haunt Encounters, and that will have links to all of our individual Twitters and provide a lot of good information as far as the show goes.
I think the captain's going to have his own fan base.
I agree. He's going to have his own fan base.
Yeah, he's going to have his Twitter account's going to blow up, and he's going to have the ladies really coming after him. But thank you so much for coming on tonight. It's been a great episode. I really appreciate you guys talking to us. I cannot wait for the premiere.
Next Friday.
And this is America's Most Haunted. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Hey, and you can find us at AM Haunted on Twitter, and same thing, AM Haunted, America's Most Haunted on Facebook. Be sure to check us out and have a great week, everybody.
Night. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Same to you. Thank you.